Welcome to the Untold History Channel. My name is Ron Partain, and we are this is one of my most favorite times of the week. It has become one of my most favorite times. We have Colonel Towner. It's the Colonel's Corner. So how are you this morning?
I'm awesome. Thank
you. Awesome. I'm a little tired this morning, and it's forgive me for this. I'm a big baseball guy. Okay. Baseball is my escape. I love the Dodgers, have since I was a kid, and they're in Seoul, Korea, playing a mini series to start the season. And the game was at 3 a.m. So I woke up to watch the game this morning.
I like the Rays, but I don't like them that much.
Right. Well, I love the Dodgers. That's about the only thing that I have left from the world that I like plug into, that I enjoy. And it's not necessarily, I don't like the sport, like the league and the ownership group and all that. I don't care about all that. I care about the actual product on the field with the players.
Right. And I can understand the hype with the Dodgers too. When I was stationed in Los Angeles, we went to a lot of Dodgers games as office functions, and the atmosphere there is just awesome.
Yeah. And you believe it or not, my, I like going to Dodger Stadium to go to the games, but I prefer going to games when they're on the road. I like to go watch them when they're on the road, and I'll tell you why. Because when you go to Dodger games at home, what you have is you have a lot of like they're fair weather fans, and they go for the experience, or it's a boyfriend.
That is a good point.
You know, it's a boyfriend taking his girlfriend, and she doesn't care. But when you go on the road, we have the diehard fans, because it's like, say the Dodgers came to Tampa Bay. Well, they're only going to come to Tampa Bay once in the whole season for like two or three games. So it's a very concentrated, thing. And you get a lot of fans that come out and watch them, because they'll travel for, 200-300 miles to come down and watch them. Because
obviously being in the military, that's every place you're ever at,
right?
So everybody is a displaced fan, and so whenever the Tampa teams, not necessarily in the 70s when they lost all the time like the Bucks, but when you go to their games wherever they play, that you are always in that seat. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
But that's why I like to go to the road games, because I feel like I'm among fans that are really passionate more about the actual game than the social event that you get at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
So
I get that.
Yeah. I was like, you go to Dodger games and everybody's, hitting the beach ball around, and I hated the beach ball. I literally stab them with pencils. It's like, I want to watch the game, and I had a good friend who had he had tickets three rows off the dugout. So, we would have really good seats, and I got to know all the ushers and everything. So a long time ago, when I would go to I would probably go to 40 games a year. And, what I would do is I knew how to kind of wiggle my way down. I would buy a cheap ticket to get into the stadium, and then I would get my way down to the lower levels, and the ushers would let me sit down there because they knew me.
Yeah.
Cool. So, but and they liked me because I made their job easier with the beach balls, because they had to track the beach balls down too. So anyway, that's why I'm probably not the sharpest tool in the shed right now, is because I woke up at 3 o'clock this morning to watch them.
Okay.
But I was going to say, I've been listening to Valentine's book, about the CIA as organized crime.
Yes.
And man, the stuff that he talks about with Project Phoenix, and how they utilized that in Vietnam, and how it's being utilized now, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of the projects that they used in specifically Iraq, and how they were those are the programs that are being implemented in the United States for people like us.
Absolutely.
Right. So it's just, and it's, you know, it's kind of terrifying when you think about that.
What's interesting to me is that so many things have happened all over the world, and whether Americans knew it and kind of ignored it, or whether they didn't know it at all because they didn't give a crap, as long as it was happening over there and not here. You have to understand that any government that does that somewhere else will do it here.
Right.
And not only will they do it here, they'll do it to everybody here. So mm-hmm. these people that are in the cheap seats right now, egging on the Phoenix program being implemented in the United States, mm-hmm. don't understand the Night of the Long Knives eventually happens.
Right. And everybody, well, you know, it's interesting. We had talked a while back about the, I think we talked offline about that, that documentary. It's like a 4-hour documentary that talked about Hitler. And it was about how the military had basically stabbed Hitler in the back. And one of the premises that they talked about was that Hitler's ideology for Germany was to have it be a merit-based system rather than a system based on, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, like nobility. So you weren't born into something, you had to earn it. And so that everybody had it was like a level playing field. And this is the mentality that they're using for the documentary. And that there was a lot of people in the military who didn't like that. And that was the guys who engaged in the July 20th plot were very much of that ilk, where they wanted nothing to do with Hitler. They couldn't stand him because of they wanted to go back to the system of nobility where they were born into it rather than having to earn their way into it. And it talks about towards the end how they thought they were going to get special treatment because they did their part to try to get rid of Hitler for the Allies, and that the Allies basically told them it didn't really matter what you did. No, you're screwed. You're just because you tried to do that, you think that we're going to go easy on you? Uh-uh, not going to happen. You are in the same boat as everybody in Germany. So you're not getting special treatment because you tried to assassinate Hitler. And I'm not picking a side in that argument. I'm just drawing that. I'm painting that picture as kind of what you're talking about with the guys that are cheering in the cheap seats. They don't understand that it's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah, the problem that I have with using that particular analogy is that, first of all, most of the people in the military weren't nobility. So the fact that it'd be like in the United States saying, while the senior officers certainly were of landed, they're not the ones fighting. So I have a problem fundamentally with that concept, because the people that are actually doing the fighting are not nobility, and they're not going to right. fight to keep up a nobility. And also, the when all was said and done, a good percentage, like a huge percentage of the people that supposedly were held accountable were never held accountable.
Right.
Yeah. So there's, I'm aware that there is those people that believe that. And I can certainly understand when you take pieces of the, but when you stand back at the 30,000 foot look and you understand what the purpose of World War II was, it really, at the end of the day, and I just had this conversation this morning, it really doesn't matter. Whether you want to believe that Hitler was a good guy that got carried downstream with a bunch of bad people, or whether he was leading the bad people, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of World War II, the Axis Fascist International did not lose. It was scattered to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Gladio is living proof that that happened.
Yes.
The next 16 years of the leadership in NATO is evident that that happened. The original cast of characters at the UN is evident that that happened. The taking over of the entire world science program mm-hmm. after World War II in every major country, Japan, Russia, Germany,
yes.
The United States, Britain, all of South America, those scientists, the people that should have been burned at a stake, were scattered to the winds to continue doing what they're doing. And that's why I believe that looking into Operation Gladio is the most critical thing that we could be doing at this time, because it exposes every bit of that. And the latest example, I just released a video yesterday. So much, I'm at the 99.9% at this point. The girls and I that were just researching, we start off, and this is every single episode. So we start off researching Haiti, right? Because we want to make all of our Operation Gladio stuff relevant to what's going on today. So was Haiti involved in any of what has happened to Haiti? Haiti, can we prove that it was Operation Gladio? Well, you go back to all of the U.S.-sponsored coups, Operation Gladio. Mm-hmm. You go to their neighbor, the Dominican Republic, we find out that there are terror training camps that were set up there, and also the Dominican Republic was couped. By the way, it's a big drug hub on the way up to the United States. So all of the things that we have come, and guess who the gladiators that they're using in the Dominican Republic, guess where they're coming from? Colombia. And then you start looking at Colombia and you realize that through these drug interdiction programs over the last three decades, we're not drug interdiction programs at all, because we know the drugs grew. So what did Colombia do with all of that money? Because they got a crap ton of money. Oh, they grew an extra 20,000 mercenaries.
Wow.
That NATO hires and farms out to Gladio coups and projects. Oh, and they also farm them out to the UN. Hmm. All over the world, you have Colombian mercenaries trained by the United States doing Gladio operations all over, just like Otto Skorzeny used to do.
Right.
So once we got to Colombia, I was talking about this whole structure, and I got a question about Guyana. So I'm like, gosh, let me pull out my map. I mean, I know it's next to Venezuela because I went to Margarita Island. And I remember when I was in the airport that there were a lot of flights over to Guyana. So I know about the history. It used to be a British colony, and then there's the French fought over it and blah, blah, blah. So
Actually considered part of France?
There was a French part, a British part, and then there's an independent part.
Okay.
So, excuse me. I went down the wrong pipe.
I was going to say, you're right.
Yeah. So as soon as you find those situations, those are ripe for Gladio operations because they dress up like each other. And back in the day when the French and the British was fighting each other over it, that's what they did. So the false flags between the two. So I knew immediately as soon as I looked at that, I'm like, oh, crap. Well, what I didn't expect to find is Jim Jones.
Yeah.
Well, guess what the Jonestown used to be?
That was a CIA mine, MK Ultra thing.
Well, that's what it became. But do you know what it was to begin with?
No.
Operation Gladio terrorist training camp.
No.
So he's down there in South America in the 70s during all of the coups. He's actually in Brazil when they staged the coup in Brazil. So
that makes so much sense.
Right? Wow. So he's in a couple of other countries down there. And then he comes back to the U.S. and we have, let me pull up that guy's name. The House of Representative guy that
went down there.
Yes. And was assassinated.
Let me look him up here. Let's see here.
Leo, Jones. I think his last name was Leo. Hold on just a second. Congressman Leo Ryan. So you have, he is actually the congressman over the area where Jim Jones's temple's out in California. So he and another guy passes a law that says that CIA can't do this crap anymore. So the CIA's pissed at him already. So then he gets some whistleblowers that are talking about child abuse and all kinds of crazy things going on in the temple. So they start an investigation. Well, one of the temple people basically framed being a whistleblower and lure him down to Guyana on that trip. He is accompanied by the station chief in Guyana for the CIA. That's when he gets assassinated.
Mm.
And so he was basically assassinated by the CIA on a Gladio base. And when he brought all those people down is when they fully staffed the local hospital with all of the psychiatrists and the mind control people. And they said that they had enough drugs on that small little installation for like 900 people to keep a normal city functioning for over a year.
Wow.
And primarily all of the drugs were mind control drugs. So basically they were doing experiments down there, the CIA. And there was a doctor that was basically doing all of this, and he has some really crazy ties too. So that's what I'm saying. In every single thing, now that I have my Gladio glasses on, when you go back and you start looking at things and you start hopscotching across these tied relationships, it's very easy now to see how all of the pieces fall into place. And mapping out this entire network becomes a lot easier. But what it does require you to do is, and this is going to be the hardest part for most people, is you literally have to get rid of everything that you ever thought you knew. And the most difficult part is the programming. And let me give you an example of that. So you start a conversation and the very first is like a Pavlov dog response. If you mention communism, mm-hmm. the very first thing anybody says that's bad.
Right.
Or if you mention Castro, well, he's communist. And we see it with Russia right now. Well, they're communist. What you find out is that the label of communist was done for a programming, a psychological programming purpose. They had to vilify, and this is where I lose people. So if I tell you in the Soviet Bolshevik Revolution, they killed millions of people for the sole purpose of demonizing communism, because they were going to use communism, as Putin says, as the boogeyman for the next 100 years, right? Mm-hmm. You would think you're crazy. Yet we just lived through COVID where they killed multiple millions of people. And these are the exact same people that will get on camera and tell you 6.5 billion with a B of you have to die.
Mm-hmm.
So
are you familiar with the Deagle numbers?
The what numbers?
Are you familiar with the Deagle? It was the Deagle report that came out in 2015. The Deagle website is a website that it's for like military procurement things, and they forecast they have like forecasts of like population for like what's going to be in the next 10 years. Well, and I'll find a couple of things that I have and I'll send them to you. They literally they predicted that the population of the globe by 2025, that the population in the United States was going to be reduced by almost 70%.
All right. So that makes my point. So the thought that, 70 years ago, these same people existed. They didn't just pop up.
Right.
And their mass annihilation plans and taking over the world with a one world government was hatched as early as the mid 1800s. So these are not new things. And along the way, there's going to be mass casualty events. And if I can sacrifice, 10 million people throughout the Eastern Europe, and I can create this boogeyman that I'm going to use for the next 100 years to take over the rest of the world. And basically, they've pretty much did that up to a point, because they had a running successful record of overthrowing governments and installing dictators that were controlled by a central entity, right?
Right. And if I may interject, I believe World War II was the essentially the construction of the laying the foundation or the framework for world government. Like everything that
100%.
Came, yeah, like World War II. Yeah, after World War II, you have the United Nations. You've got the Bank of International Settlements or the World Bank. You've got all of these things that are in the embryonic stages of all the tools they're going to be using over the course of the next 100 years.
Well, it's also the start of fake countries and the redrawing of all the boundary lines. And they redrew all the boundary lines to create friction that was going to then use the wars to depopulate.
Right.
Right. So I just had this conversation this morning. So in 1910, you have Kurdistan. Post-World War II, it's gone. Its population is divided among four countries that absolutely hate it, and they've been at war ever since. So war requires weapons. It kills people. It generates refugees, which are used as human trafficking. They drug the population so they can control it, blah, blah, blah. So it literally fits the definition of a gladio operation. And at the same time, a couple of things you didn't mention is they created the NATO headquarters and the CIA, which together makes up paramilitary way of enforcing covertly the entire operation and to keep it spun up. So they literally redefined the entire world via nation states, and in doing so created the perpetual war machine. If you're going to have a perpetual war machine to thin the herd, you have to have instigators. And that's what Gladio is.
Yes. And if you really want to go looking at World War One was their first attempt at that as well. Because what was the result of World War One was the League of Nations, which was a very weak United Nations attempt. And then you had the Spanish flu, which, if you really dig deep into the Spanish flu, it was a vaccine program that went awry.
And I agree with that. I don't think it was their first try, though. I think it was the what do you call that? The softening of the ground.
Could be.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a wrong choice of words to say it was their first try.
Right. Yeah. So, if you're going to create something, you don't necessarily create it as you want it to eventually be. You create a little part of it, and then that little part grows. And that to me is what World War One was. It was the foot in the door, if you will.
Well, and another thing that somebody in your chat, Liza, actually says, it was the world. It was a land grab for Palestine, which is at 1,000% accurate.
Correct.
Because you had how were they going to get Palestine away from the Turkish Empire? Well, Turkey was treated or allied or allianced with Germany and Austria-Hungary, and so that was how they got Germany involved in the war through Austria-Hungary, and then which ultimately led to Turkey, and then that's how they pried it away from Turkey. So
right, and that basically was the end of the Ottoman Empire.
Right. Thank you. The Ottoman Empire. I was having memory or recall issue, but yeah, the Ottoman Empire. That was what they. And then you had the Sykes-Picot Agreement, and then the all the Arabs got screwed. There's so much to this, and it's so.
And people. That's why I think this is so awesome, because it gives us a way of going back and looking at our history with different views on. So back to the communism thing. So what I want people to understand is communism is, and I'm not saying communism doesn't exist, but I want to ask a philosophical question. Mm-hmm. If we say that there's not a whole lot of difference between a fascist and like a dictator and a communist dictator, which we're told constantly that's what Putin is, and that's what Castro was, right? That's kind of our programming. So what's the difference between Castro, the dictator, and Pinochet, the dictator? We loved one. We recognized him immediately in the form of Pinochet, when he and the CIA overthrew Allende. But when Castro overthrew Batista, we would never recognize him.
Is the difference because Castro was a more organic thing and it wasn't CIA sponsored, whereas Pinochet was?
Technically, Castro was CIA sponsored. If you go back, there was a CIA agent that lived in the same hotel and had lunch with Castro all the time. The CIA seeded both sides of that. They supplied weapons to both sides of that. They trained Che Guevara.
Right.
The CIA did. So what the difference is once Castro came to power, he told the United States they could not bring the mafia back in, and they weren't getting their casinos back, and they weren't going to use Cuba as a drugs staging place anymore. He then gets labeled not just a fascist dictator. He's a communist. But Pinochet, who kills probably 10 times more people over a much shorter period of time than Castro could have ever dreamed of killing, was immediately recognized because he was on the payroll. And I can go country by country throughout all of South America, most of Central America. And again, over 70 times the CIA has changed out a head of state, installing a dictator that killed massive amounts of people and were immediately recognized. The only ones not recognized were the ones that were not controllable. So who's the real communist?
I see where you're going with that. And that was kind of what Stalin was that way. Stalin was, they thought they were going to control Stalin. And at the end of World War II, and Stalin was like, "Yeah, no, I'm not down with that program." He used, he used all of the allies, you know, their benevolence, if you will, to take over Eastern Europe. And then when it came time for him to play ball on the world government stage, he's like, we're going to do it, but we're going to do it my way. I'm not on board with you.
And then you're the villain.
Right.
So I go back and I want everybody to question their knee-jerk reaction of the label of communism. The communism label is, in my opinion, a psychological operation. It is the painting of someone they cannot control with a label that they have masterfully created. And the same thing, so if you go to Laos is the exact same situation. They created Pol Pot. They trained the forces for Pol Pot, and they used his atrocities to call him a communist, whether he was or not. And then he was more of a fascist. But by calling him a communist and knowing how ruthlessly he was killing people, it made for good TV if you're in the middle of a psychological operation to... Right. Be able to worldwide, anybody you can't control, label a communist. That has profound effects.
That makes perfect sense to me. That's actually something that I had never really given thought to, but that actually adds up.
It does. That's
very logical.
And then you know how I came to that? Because they made the mistake of calling the entity that they used as a subterfuge to meet the World Anti-Communist League. If you look up the World Anti-Communist League, look up and tell me where it was created.
Let's see here. World League for Freedom and Democracy, which I guess is probably what this is, probably the same thing.
No, it's not. It's WACL, World Anti-Communist League. Now they may have changed the name.
I'm looking it up and that's the first thing that comes up for on Wikipedia. Not that it's see, World Anti-Communist League, and this is from the Encyclopedia of Ukraine. Let me check this out.
That's probably not the best place to look, but
no, I know. I'm just saying it's this.
Well, I'll give you a hint. It was Taiwan.
Oh well, that just makes perfect sense because of
Chiang.
Yeah, thank you. Man,
so
it was your influence that gave me a completely different perspective on Taiwan and Chiang Kai-shek. Right. I was like, whoa, that was like and you think about it, you look at the what was Chiang Kai-shek doing? He was basically poisoning his citizenry.
He became the world's most prolific drug trafficker ever created. And Mao kicked him out.
So now, and I'm not disagreeing or agreeing, but I'm curious, where do we come in with the Cultural Revolution and the killing of like 70 million people? I don't know.
Again, I'm not saying everybody's good, but I am saying the communist programming that we have been fed is a lie. So I'm not saying that obviously the Pinochet is, he's a dictator. He was a mass killer. I'm not saying that Castro is good. because absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes.
So anytime that you have dictators, you run the risk of, the CIA certainly runs the risk of them getting out of control. Mm-hmm. And you do by human nature. So I am not by any stretch of the imagination trying to say any of these world leaders are good or bad. But I would argue the country that has installed over 70 dictators should not be the one labeling people as good or bad.
Amen.
And amen to that. That's where we find ourselves, right? So my position has always been, I don't care. If Mao's bad, that's up to China to fix. Mm-hmm. If Castro's bad, that's up to Cuba to fix. Not one penny of my tax dollars needs to be spent in any foreign country telling that country who's in charge for any reason.
Right.
I got enough shit to blow you up. Don't mess with me.
I'm right there with you.
And the only reason that you would be doing what we're doing right now is to establish one world government. It's not in Switzerland. It's in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the World Economic Forum. It's D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's London. They created the WEF. They created the WHO. They moved them to some quote unquote neutral country to deflect who's actually controlling the strings. It is not the WEF who is installing all of these freaking dictators. It is the CIA.
Right.
It is Gladio. It is NATO.
Yes. And it's interesting. I want to share this with you, the flag of Washington, D.C., just because I think there's relevance here to what you're talking about. When you look at the flag of D.C., which is a white flag with the two stripes and then the three stars, and the three stars, as I understand it, one of them is D.C. for the military arm. One of them is the second star is the finance arm out of London. And the third one is the spiritual arm, which is out of the Vatican.
I have been told that. I don't know whether that's true or not.
I don't either, but that's, I get right. But yeah. if you look at all three of those places, they all have this symbology because there's an obelisk there.
Interestingly enough, those were kind of the three things that created Gladio too.
Right.
And the NATO and all of the rest, because it was MI6, the CIA, and they used the Vatican for money laundering. So,
that's right. Gladio was there, you know, Gladio was basically the small sword that was used in the gladiator games in the Roman Empire in Rome.
It is the paramilitary arm of the entire operation.
Right.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah. So that's all very interesting, I think. So the thing that I was going to talk about today, but I find this much more fascinating because I really think it's so important that people understand the concepts behind everything and the fact that everything we've ever been told is a lie.
Right.
So the whole Taiwan thing, total lie. There's over, if you Google, not that I Google, but if you research Taiwan, they have over 50 pharmaceutical companies, and pharmaceutical companies is where they hide the making of LSD. Mm-hmm. and heroin and all of that other stuff. They always have back to just post-World War II. So it all ties together. And that's, you know, you go back to Jonestown. That was all about experimenting with LSD as well, because right. Not only were they doing it in Jonestown, Guyana, they were doing it in San Francisco at the same time that he was out there. And they actually got in trouble multiple times, and multiple people within that temple group for drugs. So It is literally, it all ties together. So,
yeah, you know, and I it was crazy to me when you talked about the where Leo Ryan was from, and I looked it up on the map, and he's right there basically. Yes. In I don't know if it was it was kind of hard to see because it wasn't but it was like right there around like Monterey area.
It was Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
that was his jurisdiction, and it was where all of this was going on. And let's see, Bridget just reminded me that the salute, the straight arm salute, was predated Hitler. It was mm-hmm. a Roman salute. Yes. So it kind of all goes back to the same.
And the Roman symbol was the eagle.
Black Eagle Trust.
And the
all of the gold that Hitler stole,
right? And you look at the one of the main symbols for Germany was the eagle, and this is something that's really interesting to me. You know, when was the attempt on Hitler, the main attempt? It was July 20th of 1944. What was the 25th anniversary of that? Apollo 11 moon landing. And what did they call out? The eagle has landed.
That's interesting.
I don't know what that, I don't know, but it's just, I mean, that's just, there's some crazy symbology there. And we know how they love the number 11, you know.
Absolutely.
9/11. Yeah. What was the first plane to hit the tower was flight 11. You know, when was, you know, what was the armistice day is the 11th hour of the 11th month of the 11th day or the 11th day of the 11th month. So 11, 11, 11, which is 33. Then they killed Kennedy on November 22nd, which is 33. Apollo 11 and then 9/11. I mean, there's just all kinds of 11s there. So anytime 11 is used, and the event that happened in, I think it was March 11th of 1967 was when, I think it was it was the Soviet submarine. Was it K one? Was it 129? I'm probably getting the number wrong, but it was the that Russian submarine that surfaced about 400 miles north of Honolulu that was going to launch a submarine based ballistic missile against Honolulu, and the missile blew up in the tube, and it sank the submarine. And they were going to blame that on the Chinese for having the United States go to war with China. And but it was a Russian crew. So it's very interesting stuff. But again, that goes on to the March 11th thing. And then, you know, the numbers are interchangeable. So if it's a 3/11 or 11/3 is the same thing. So March 11th or November 3rd is the same thing. And I don't know if you've ever gone and looked up. There was a. I'll send you the video. It's about a half an hour long. It's a fascinating video where this kid did talk about predictive programming, and you know, had Hillary won. As I understood it, what they were going to do is they were going to detonate a nuclear device somewhere in the United States, and my understanding it was going to be Seattle on 3/11 or 11/3 of 2018, I believe. And you go back and you look at all of the symbology that they talk about where they were going to, you know, do 9/11 or, you know, for DC and the Twin Towers were, you know, all of the artwork, whether it be art or TV or whatever, the symbology that they predictive programming was there for Seattle as well. You remember the movie War Games?
I don't watch movies.
Well, this is from 1985.
I've never watched movies.
So that's okay. But in the movie War Games, that was it was this kid who was really big into computers, and he had they talked about how they're going, let's go to Seattle and Vegas, right? So anyway, there's a lot of stuff there, and it very interesting that weekend, you know how they love to do drills and they make drills go active during the drill, because I mean, on 9/11 of 2001, they were conducting a drill of multiple airliners being hijacked. Did you know that?
Part of Operation Gladio is them doing exercises, and that allows them to pre-assemble all of the stuff that they need under the form of exercises.
Gotcha.
Many of them correlate with that. That happened in the London tube bombing. That happened to a small cell extent on March 11th, Spain train bombing.
Right.
Which goes back to your 311 numbering system, but it also happened in Sweden. It's happened in multiple Operation Gladio events.
Okay.
Which I think 9/11 was as well.
Sure. Well, the point I was making is on, I think it was November the 3rd of 2018, FEMA was conducting a drill of an ICBM strike in Seattle.
Got it.
So, you know, but my opinion is, you know, love him or hate him or whatever, and I'm a Trump guy, but I believe that Trump winning derailed their plans.
I agree.
Massively. Massively.
I agree.
So, but anyway, I digress. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall, which I think you know, but if you know it or not, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Liza's telling me that the sub sank on the 8th and that it was basically a ruse to steal the nuke that was on there. Okay. I've not researched that particular event, but I did want to. I've been asked multiple times about the situation in Bosnia. Interestingly enough, when this kicked off, I was still in San Vito, Italy, across the Adriatic Sea from Yugoslavia, and was part of the operation. All of the search and rescue resources for all of the flights that were going down to Yugoslavia came in over the Adriatic Sea. And so they pre-positioned all of the helicopters and the C-130s used for air rescue at our base and the Brindisi Airport in southern Italy. And so that was kind of interesting to me because I lived through it, not realizing at all what it was. And I've just found that completely fascinating. Just like I was in northern Iraq during Desert Storm. And again, I lived through all of that and I had no idea what was going on around me. And I'm not sure most of the senior officers did either, because they're not privy to the false flags that set up the pretense for these engagements. There are some people that are privy to it. Most of them have had assignments at NATO in a particular special operations branch that originally was set up as ACC. That was it was Allied Clandestine Committee. That was part of the NATO headquarters. And anybody that they're now referring to it as the special operations area, that has been assigned to that area, there is a high likelihood that they know what's going on as far as the Operation Gladio false flags. But I wanted to run through the Bosnia one.
Yeah, let's do that.
Just because it's so fascinating, because it very much resembles what happened in Ukraine and what's going on here. So you basically had Yugoslavia finally collapse as a result of it in 1992. The politicians had convinced the Serbs and their Muslim neighbors that had lived together forever that they were each other's enemy, kind of like what they do with race and everything else. So they convinced the Serbs that their Muslim neighbors wanted to take their land and impose their religion and create basically a Muslim state. Kind of sounds familiar, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a book that I read that talked about the missing piece was the presence of Al-Qaeda in Bosnia at the time, in Serbia, in that whole area. There was a transformation that happened from it being like an isolated fighting force to basically it went global. And it's almost like Bosnia was kind of the incubator to get the quote unquote threat started. Mm-hmm. And the Bosnian War went from 92 to 95. And there's a guy by the name of John Schindler, and he revealed that there was a particular part that radical Islam played in how the whole thing got pulled off. And basically the American policy kind of created Al-Qaeda in that area to do basically what it has now done. And you find almost in every case, every terror organization starts with some type of Gladio operation. And then it just grows from there. The Muslim Brotherhood started in Egypt, and it was done by both the MI6/CIA crowd before it was a CIA, like when it was still OSS. But those same people are what created, because the British, if the people don't know, they created a thing called a MUFTI. It's M-U-F-T-I or M-U-T-F-I. In creating that, they are artificially designating someone as kind of the Islamic scholar of that area. And when that entity is created by MI6, that's a problem, right? So they then radicalize to support the goals of the intelligence community, and they use Islam as a tool, not unlike they used communism. And the same is true in Israel, which we did a lot of research into the MAPI of Jerusalem. That was a totally made up thing by the British when they were first setting up Israel. And the MAPI ended up, he would literally dress people up like Jewish people to attack Muslims when they wanted that to happen. And then they would do the reverse. So they could instigate immediate outrage and terror, all to get all of the people down there, whether they were Palestinian Christians or the original Jewish people, because there were some of all of them that was pre the UN League of Nations mandate. Everybody lived down there in harmony. They had lived down there in harmony for hundreds of years. They didn't fight each other. They just lived. It wasn't until this garbage comes in that they radicalize. And that's exactly what they did in the Bosnia area. So I wanted to make that analogy there. It also talks about how this basically same thing was done in Afghanistan with the Taliban and the creation of a terror network inside of Afghanistan. So in Bosnia, it basically became a training ground for a Mujahideen type Islamic terror mechanism. And it also exposes the story of how bin Laden successfully exploited the Bosnian conflict for his own end. and how basically the U.S. government was giving support to him at the time in order to create all of the problems in Bosnia.
I'm absolutely on board with that. You know, you look at the grand chessboard when Brzezinski, he was laying the foundation for basically fundamental Islam to take the place of the communistic threat, yeah. You know, 20 years before the correct. Collapse of the Soviet correct. Union. And correct. I mean, the timing of that is, I mean, so the wall fell in 91. And when does that war break out? 92 to 95? I mean,
no, 91. Well, we went to Iraq in 91. So we were correct. Already making them. Yeah.
but my point is, I mean, that's right on my timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as one's gone, we're going to create the other. And of course, they use the story of us going into Iraq as, oh, we were creating the radicalized Islamists by going into Iraq.
Right.
Yeah.
That's we were essentially telling the Kuwaitis to slant drill into the oil fields at Ramallah.
Correct. And create the problem.
And to create the problem. And then Saddam Hussein comes to Ebel Gillespie and say, "Hey, you know what? They're doing this. They're drilling and they're slant drilling into our oil fields, and you know we want your permission to go in and take care of this." And so, of course, we granted permission to do that. No,
and
course.
When did we do that?
Oh, that was in 1990.
August, actually, the last week of July, because it was the 2nd of August when he went in. Which is
let me look it up.
Audio stuff happened. No, I'm telling you, this is when it happened, because that's the day I got to Italy.
Gotcha.
They invaded Kuwait on the 2nd of August. And on the 2nd of August, all hell broke loose in Italy because they exposed Operation Gladio, and that NATO was behind it and the CIA was behind it.
I had never even thought
Iraq
connect those events.
Yes, the entire Iraq thing became the excuse on how NATO could never talk about Operation Gladio because they were in the middle of a war.
Wow, I had never even...
2nd of August. And wow. See, that's why this whole story is so personal, because it is as if when I read through these things, the places where so many of this stuff happened and the dates that it happened corresponds with something significant for me, which allows me, because had I not arrived in Italy on the 2nd of August, I would have missed that entire thing too. I would have read two different stories talking about two different things and never put the two together. But because the 2nd of August, I touched down in Italy. I've never been other than to like Vancouver or, you know, Mexico. I've never been to a real foreign country. And the shock of coming off that aircraft, and there was a million carabinieri in the airport, all carrying AK-47s. And I was shocked. I mean, like physically shocked. And I asked the ticket person at customs, "What the hell? Do y'all look like this all the time?" And they're like, "No, Saddam Hussein just invaded Kuwait. And the last time something like that kicked off in the Middle East, they bombed the Rome airport, which was part of Operation Gladio too." And so they were prepared for any kind of terror attack on the Rome airport, because obviously that's very symbolic. And so that was just like drilled into my psyche that happened on the 2nd of August. And so when I'm reading through Operation Gladio and I'm like, wait just a minute. And NATO knew 2 weeks in advance that this was going to get released around the 2nd of August, because the information had been discovered in some really crazy ways. And so they knew they were on borrowed time. So, hey, well,
FYI, I was looking at the time, and when Gillespie met with Saddam Hussein, it was July 25th, 90.
Exactly.
So it was like a week
later, he's in.
Right.
Yeah. And the week before that is when NATO figured out that Gladio was going to spin out of control.
Wow.
And I do not think any of that's coincidence. No,
well, that's like, it's, I mean, not that it's a parallel, but not, and they don't have anything to do with the other. But when the whole thing went down with Monica Lewinsky, that was when they bombed that aspirin factory or whatever down in Sudan or something. The Monica Lewinsky scandal broke at the same time because they were trying to deflect from, I guess they'd bombed some, the Americans had bombed some target of like civilian target down in Africa somewhere.
Yeah, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing has its own Gladio
undertone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, back to Kosovo.
Sorry.
You have a backstory that goes on with 9/11 in that two of the alleged Muslim hijackers in Flight 77, the Hazmi guy and the Al-Midar, had in 1999, the Al-Hazmi guy was one of several supposed 9/11 hijackers who was trained in a camp in Turkey by a guy by the name of Sakra, S-A-K-R-A. Sakra was basically working for multiple intelligence agencies, the Syrian, the Turkish, and the CIA. And there is little doubt when you look into his background that he definitely was a Gladio operative.
How do you spell it again?
S-A-K-R-A. So Sakra spent much of the mid-late 1990s involved in the Balkans, where NATO was arming and training the Bosnian Mujahideen, who then became the Bosnian Muslim Army. He set up the local branches of the services offices for the Mujahideen, an organization that goes all the way back to the Soviet-Afghan War and Operation Cyclone. It is the same organization that had a branch in New York, where in 1993, the World Trade bombers were recruited and trained, and the whole thing was being ran by a CIA asset called the Blind Sheik, alongside another Gladio operative, Ali Mohammed. So Sakra's branch of this organization was like a training camp in Turkey, and it helped provide, jihadi recruits for the war in Bosnia and then in Kosovo. They also, many of the same people show up in Albania. And the Albania thing is a whole story in and of itself. And it's very much at the time that I was there in the 90s, like Haiti. There were boat people coming across the Adriatic Sea all the time to Italy from Albania. It was a mess. So as I say, he was recruited by the CIA around the late 1990s or early 2000. At the same time he's running a training camp in Turkey, the CIA then passes information to Turkish intelligence, which led to him and this group of trainees being picked up and interrogated. Then they're mysteriously let go, even though they all know what they're doing. Sakra supposedly knew about the 9/11 plot and warned his Syrian handler the day before the attacks happened. According to media reports, the Syrians didn't pass this information on to the CIA. But bear in mind, at this point, the Syrian government were quite friendly with the West. It's not like it was today. So there is very little doubt that that was passed on. George Tenet, the director of the CIA throughout this period, even wrote a book that said, "A source we were jointly running with a Middle Eastern country went to see his foreign handler and basically told him that something big was about to go down." After 9/11, Sakra became a wanted man and went to ground in Germany before escaping with the help of German intelligence, which is the BND, which was the making of General Galen, a Nazi.
Right.
Parliamentary inquiry later exonerated the BND of any wrongdoing, because of course it does. Sacher went on to mastermind the 2003 Istanbul bombings, which helped sell the Iraq war. And it was mainly that bombing in Istanbul, which, you know, killed Turkish people, was mainly to use to sell the Americans and the Brits on it. Because some of the bombings were on the HSBC bank and the British consulate. So Sacher still wasn't, they have no problem killing people. That's what everybody needs to understand.
Right.
Sacher still wasn't caught for another 2 years. And when he was finally brought to ground, he started talking about how Al-Qaeda is the name of a secret service operation. The concept called fighting terror in the background of a low intensity warfare conducted by a monopolar world order. Right. Right. Okay. So, yeah, it's not like everybody doesn't know. We're the only ones that didn't know.
Monopolar. That's all you need to know. We are the mono.
Yeah. So anyway, there was a guy that, I read, I didn't write down his first, name. His last name's Hurley. And, he did work basically for the CIA and NSC, that was focused on Bosnia and Kosovo, and, basically had talked, or discussed NATO's, owning of the Gladio operation to basically destroy the former Yugoslavia. And basically, I'm going to take a little bit about from him, what he said about it. So there was an advertisement for a speech that he did at Ohio State Michael Hurley, there it is, which said, quote, on 9/11, Michael Hurley volunteered to work in CIA's counterterrorist center and to deploy to Afghanistan. He served three tours in Afghanistan post 9/11, leading agency employees and special forces in southeastern Afghanistan. He was one of the agency's lead coordinators on the ground during Operation Anaconda, the largest battle against Al-Qaeda in the campaign in Afghanistan, unquote. So this is, on the ground, black ops coordinator who turns up in crucial wars both before and after 9/11. He is also a lawyer and was appointed senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission and ran the team investigating the CIA and the National Security Council. Let that sink in. So,
wow.
He was also put in charge of the 9/11 public disclosure project, which basically disclosed nothing.
Yeah, are you talking about, you say the disclosure project, you're not talking about,
there was an official 9/11, public disclosure project.
Okay.
So the kicker is that when he was in Afghanistan helping the special forces teams in their quote unquote war against Al-Qaeda, without telling any of them that they created it. He was of course, serving under the CIA station chief in Kabul, who was at the time Rich Bleeb, B-L-E-E. That's the guy in the CIA's bin Laden unit who was intricately involved in making sure the information on Al-Hazami and Mendikar was not passed on to the FBI before 9/11. So my best guess is that all of these guys, Blee, Hurley, at the CIA, and the people, Sacher and Anwar all Iwaki that were out in the field, whether they realize it or not, that all of them were part and parcel of a Gladio operation that was leading up to the 9/11.
Hmm.
So I just want to kind of provide that background, because oftentimes what you find when you're looking at these things, I can't stress this enough. The first thing that you have to look up is who was the ambassador and who's the CIA station chief, because oftentimes throughout South America, Southeast Asia, the European ones oftentimes rotate through Russia too. You will find at the time they're doing a coup, a particular handful of ambassadors and CIA station chiefs, basically like they just recycle them because they're read in on Operation Gladio and they know what to do.
Right. I'm trying to look here and see what John Brennan's career chronology is and see where he was. Cause I think Brennan was the guy who is responsible for signing all the visas coming out of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. He was in Saudi Arabia at the time.
Right. He was the one who was responsible for all the hijackers, as I understand.
So. Right. Yeah.
It runs so deep and so broad and so, God. And you know, there's a lot of stuff that's still clandestine, but there's a lot of stuff that's actually in the open. And if you have if you know how, you can connect some of these dots.
That's why I use that word. When you put your Gladio glasses on and you just go back and you read regular open source information, you can see all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But without the glasses, without the framework, it's meaningless. And I tell that story about having read Whitney Webb's 2-volume book about the blackmail scheme. And I read it and I was like, okay. She goes into depth, and since you brought up Monica Lewinsky, we'll just go there. She brought up in depth, because blackmail obviously is the grease that makes all of this work, that there was a group that a handful of billionaire Jewish people created called the Mega Group. The Mega Group was in New York City. It had Les Wexner, a guy from Chicago, that Adelson guy that was a sponsor of Trump from Las Vegas, just a handful of them. And they're all billionaires. Well, and we know that Epstein kind of worked for all of them, and that he went to the White House all the time, right? We've heard about that. And everybody thinks that's associated with the child trafficking aspect. But let me suggest that it's something completely different, because what we know is that this mega group in a cable that was exposed several years later is referred to as somebody says that they want a particular piece of intel, and it is replied back, we don't use Mega for that reason. And they thought Mega was the name of a spy embedded in the White House. However, this mega organization of these wealthy billionaires funded exclusively, I'll say almost exclusively, because I've not ever seen the entire list, but every single person part of the mega group was on this list. Mm. The renovation of the White House. Y'all all remember that there was a big scandal about private donations being used to renovate the White House. Mm-hmm. Well, those private donations came from Mega. Mm-hmm. And guess why Jeffrey Epstein is notorious for renovating things?
Because he puts in all of the blackmail, he puts in all the recording stuff and spyware stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So he's intimately involved in the renovation. And it is known that the.
Is this the blue dress?
Yes. Linda Tripp says that the only reason she came out and said something is because someone had told her that Israel was blackmailing Clinton about the affair with Monica Lewinsky. Well, how would Israel know about that? Right?
But they had to have been, they had to have been spying. That's the only thing. They had.
Correct. Yeah. And let me do one more for you. Since I'm a hunter, I have my trophy buck, that my first buck I ever shot, have it mounted, nice 8-point, beautiful. That photo that Jeffrey Epstein had hanging in his New York house was the trophy buck hanging on the wall of Clinton in the blue dress.
That blue dress.
They bought their own president.
That's like, that makes so much sense.
It makes so much sense. So I tell you that story because when I read all of the Whitney Webb exposing of Mega and the implications, she doesn't come out and say that that's, but the implication is there. Right. I read that 2 years ago when that book first came out, and I'm like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense. She doesn't make the analogy with the picture though. And so I just kind of filed that away as information. But when we went back and I did the book review on Rumble of the whole book after putting my Gladio glasses on, it made so much more sense, mm-hmm. right? Because everything about it is connected. So what is the big deal about Clinton? Well, we know Clinton was running drug ops out of MENA.
Yep.
What has to do with Gladio? Drug ops.
Drugs.
In the United States. There was a terror training camp right beside the MENA airport.
Yep.
What were they doing there? Oh, and by the way, Whitney Webb makes... Webb. The argument that the Chinese small arms manufacturing is the whole reason that the Columbus airport blew up and all of the old Rickenbacker airfield got expanded like 4 times with two dedicated own custom terminals where they did their own custom work there, like signing shit into the United States from foreign entities. And where were all the flights coming in from? Hong Kong. Where did all the drugs from Taiwan go before they were put on a ship or an airplane? Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
So you've got drugs coming in. You also, China at the time, before it was cut off, was sending a crap load of small arms into the United States. And when those deals were signed during the Clinton administration, that's when the air operations in Ohio expanded like tenfold. So you have arms shipments, you have drug shipments, you have all of that going on.
And that's why Les Wexner's house is, I mean, his mansion is right outside of Columbus.
Right by Rickenbacker.
Mm-hmm.
So you also have who was that? Ron Brown, who is the guy that authorized the customs standalone units to be placed in Columbus at Rickenbacker, who is going to be, he had already been subpoenaed, is going to testify, and then he gets called on a sudden trip and shot dead.
I'm going to show you my screen. Okay. I'm just going to show you my screen to show you this is what I was looking up. I was literally looking up Ron Brown.
Yeah.
I was literally looking this up earlier.
Every single thing that I just talked about, Ron Brown is tied intimately to.
Yes.
And he was going to spoil his guts.
Yeah.
He wanted a plea deal.
And the guy, and I'm having a hard time remembering his name or who it was, but there was a person who was supposed to also be on that flight, on that flight that Ron Brown was on that they took down. They took that flight down, but the guy who was on that flight, he boarded TWA-800.
Yeah, and that one office that was responsible for that kind of stuff was on there except for one woman, and she ends up dead in her office.
Okay. So I don't know if it was like a, I don't know if it was the, if they were responsible for the same thing. I just know that there was somebody who was, I'm in a brain fart of what the guy's name was, but, he was supposed to be on that flight that Ron Brown was on. I don't know if they were coordinating the same things, but I do know that they were both supposed to be on that flight. And then this guy didn't ultimately get on that flight, but he got on the TWA-800, and then that was why they took 800 down.
Well, and understand that all of what we just talked about affects Haiti too, because all of that stuff was going on in Haiti, where they were shipping arms into Haiti as well. So, and then you fast forward and you talk about programs like Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious has been going on for decades. They just got caught with that one aspect of it. I was just reading about, so tonight at 9 o'clock, there's going to be a very interesting Gladio with Alpha Warrior podcast that comes out, and a very small, I'm trying to think of how to say this. One aspect of the video is that when I went back and looked at all of the quote unquote cartels that we're always told is Mexican cartels in Mexico, one of the most famous ones are not even Mexican. They were Cubans.
Mm.
And once you see the podcast tonight, that's going to make all the sense in the world. Because again, I can't say it enough. Nothing is what you think it is.
Right. Well, and you know, that goes back to what Colby said. I think it was Colby when he was in Reagan's initial cabinet meeting, when he said, you know, he made the statement that, you know, that everything the American people, we will know our disinformation programs are working when everything the American people believes is false.
Is a lie. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I had somebody ask me the other day whether Colby was good or not, because, you know, they end up killing him. And it's interesting, just like Ron Brown, you can have really bad people that they want to get rid of, that they mm-hmm. end up killing, even though they had done everything they were ever asked to do, because they become inconvenient at some point. And that goes back to our original conversation about the Night of the Long Knives.
Right.
You play that game and you will be killed. It's just a matter of when, because correct. You're not them. And all of these idiots that are on Twitter justifying the Supreme Court being crazy, or Biden letting people in through an open border, your child will be killed. It doesn't matter whether it's today, and it doesn't matter whether it's by an illegal alien. You are not going to make the $1 billion cut. You are going to be in the 6.5 right. billion.
Correct. Right. So exactly.
Plan accordingly.
And it's, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I've said that so many times. It's like everybody who is involved in in the clandestine, anything clandestine. It's like their ultimate end is going to be not of their choosing. They're not going to die peacefully in their beds for the most part.
I wouldn't say that. There's a lot of them that has, unfortunately. Like a lot of the people that were involved in MK Ultra lived long lives. I know where they're at now, but unfortunately, this has gone on long enough to allow many of them to look at Otto Skorzeny. I mean, he died of natural causes.
That's true.
Mark Kinnikus, the guy that was in charge of the Vatican Bank that was laundering trillions of dollars, he not only died of natural causes in Phoenix, Arizona, we protected him. Italy wanted him extradited to stand trial, and we protected him. So, yeah.
That makes that, and I shouldn't, I know better than to make an absolute statement, and I shouldn't have done that.
That's okay. I'm here for you.
Yeah, I know better. I know better to make an absolute statement, and I should probably say the vast majority of people. If you know you play in that game, you know if you're you play in the kitchen long enough, you're going to get burned. You know, so
yeah.
But it's man, there's so much to. go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with you. There is so much.
Well, I read the book, that book by Anthony Sutton, a while back, talking about George Bush before, he wrote it when George Bush was, vice president, and he was, he was going to be running for president. And in that short little book at the end, there was a document that was written by Bo Greitz. And this goes back to what you were talking about in terms of the money that was sent to Colombia for training. And in that letter that Bo Greitz sent to Congress, it talked about all of the money that who was the leader of Thailand? The guy who was the head of Thailand in the 70s, he was a general. And
I know who you're talking about.
Drawing a blank, can't remember his name. But anyway, he literally was like, "I'll help you guys cut off all the drugs. I'll help you stop it." But we actively are, all the money that you're sending over here to stop the drugs is actually going to be to in the efforts of building a road to get the drugs out faster.
Correct. So well, that the chief of police in Thailand had been paid $35 million to protect all the ports and not arrest any of the CIA people doing the drugs shipping.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, all the money, all the congressional money that was being sent to Thailand to stop, you know, for the drug interdiction stuff, all that money was converted into actually creating the infrastructure to make it bigger.
What did I tell you was happening in Colombia?
Yeah.
Every bit of the money to stop the drug trafficking in Colombia was used to train mercenaries to protect the drug network.
Yeah.
We have funded our own demise.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't funded our own demise, but they created the Federal Reserve. And see, this is where I get frustrated, because people say it's our tax dollars. And ultimately, I guess at the end of the day, you know, if it's income tax, it's going to pay money into the Federal Reserve. But the Federal Reserve, you know, our tax dollars do not fund the federal government. The federal government is funded by the Federal Reserve, which is loaning money out to the federal government at interest. And when they created the Federal Reserve, you essentially reverse the flow of money from the states into the federal government to the federal government out to the states, and you centralized power.
I know, but at the end of the day, it is our responsibility to hold our government
accountable. Yes, agree. 1,000% agree.
It is our job to make sure that the Federal Reserve goes away. It is our job to make sure we stop sending money overseas, whether it's printed by the Federal Reserve or our tax dollars. To me, I understand your point. Your point is well taken. But at this point, it's irrelevant because it's our congressmen who have been bought and paid for that continue the flow of whatever it is, whether it's debt money or tax money. The representatives no longer represent the people in the United States. They represent this CIA apparatus that is destroying our country and the world, for that matter.
Yes, a 1,000%. And I'm one of the perfect. I don't even know what got me onto this rabbit trail, but I was watching. I was watching the Sean Ryan program where he interviewed the four guys from Blackwater that were railroaded for the killing of the so-called killing of 17 innocents, Iraqi civilians in 2007. Mm-hmm. That was all BS. And then that led me to listening to the podcast where he interviewed Eddie Gallagher and, how they were railroading Eddie Gallagher. And, all of that stuff. I don't remember where I was going with that, but you look at I know where it's going, because Eddie Gallagher, he was a team guy, obviously, and they were trying to get, they'd actually gone to, Patch One Eye, Eye Patch McCain, it's the guy that from Texas.
Dan Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, thank you. He was a SEAL officer, and they had gone to him, and they told him everything that was going on, and he said, "I'll see what I can do." Well, not only was Crenshaw working, not going to sign the petition to let him go out, he literally was advocating and doing everything he could behind the scenes, working against Gallagher.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And it's guys like Gallagher, it's guys like Crenshaw who are the people that are placed in government. And this is where I understand what you're saying in terms of it's our responsibility to hold our representatives accountable. But see, this is where I slightly disagree from the standpoint that I don't think that these people are representing us, and I don't think that they've been elected. I think they've been placed there, that the elections have been rigged to get them there, and there, as long as they play the game and do their part, they can never be voted out.
I understand that point. However, I will say that some of these people are voted in overwhelmingly, where I can agree with you if the election is 49-51. That's a clear sign of rigging. But in many of these cases, because people aren't out there doing their homework, these elections are being won like 80-20. And that's absolutely ridiculous, especially when it comes to things like that. And I mean, the clearest example right now is all of the money going to Ukraine. There is so much information out there that Ukraine is so dirty and that the CIA has overthrown the government twice. And yet here we are, we're still having this conversation. And I still see people, I speak at different events, and you literally have to walk them through how there's nothing good about Ukraine as far as, the people that are the innocents, people, fine, but the actual government is corrupt as hell.
100%.
Having this conversation, and at some point, that has to stop, because it should not even be a consideration when you're $34 trillion in debt that you're going to send another penny anywhere, to include Israel.
I agree, and I'll tell you, I think that there are people that can fight the fight. But they aren't, it's not necessarily the regular people. It's people who have the means to do it. And I do think that there was, when you look at the thing that happened with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried, because that's what they were, that was the mechanism that they were using to launder the money that was being sent to Ukraine to come back in.
Yeah.
Right. And it was, I don't know how much you know about crypto, but it was CZ Binance, the guy who he's the one who pulled all of his money out of that at the and caused the run on FTX,
which exposed the corruption.
Right. They didn't. I don't think they planned on that. That wasn't a planned event. I think that was a white hat operation to expose that corruption. And right. So call me naive, but I tend to look at that as like, that's just interesting. And you know, and he's associated with Elon Musk, and Elon Musk is, you know, we live in a world of gray. We do not live in a world of black and white. And I know there's a lot of people who question Elon Musk, and I'm right there too. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that Musk has done that I'm like, well, you know, I'm on board with that. And right. He was connected to CZ, and there was, you know, I mean, it's absolutely plausible that they worked in conjunction, they worked in tandem to make that happen. To expose FTX, and you know, you look at the people who were at the funding and creation and formation of FTX, and it was guys like Gensler, and who's Gensler? Gensler is the head of the SEC right now, but at one point he was the head of the FTC or the CFTC, and when he left the CFTC, where did he go? He was the head of the Hillary campaign, and he was the one writing all the checks for the dossier.
So Brian Cates must be listening to us, because he just DM'd me that we all know airports play a big role in the shadow cabal activities. And he sends me the recent article that came out about the executive director of Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport shot in the head by federal agents. I don't know if you saw that article.
I did not. Well, if Brian Cates is listening, I give him a hello, Brian. It's a big fan. And I think we know a lot of the same people, but.
Well, he's he lives in my hometown here. So, So anyway, it just came out on March 20th, 2024. This particular article that he sent me. But if you go back and you look at where this guy, what other airports he's been at, you could start asking a few questions. I don't see anything that glaringly says that he was part of a network of Gladio, but I can certainly make a plausible case, that there's some interesting ties in his background. So thanks, Brian, for pointing that out, because you're absolutely right. And this is not just one airport. I mean, obviously, air operations is huge in many respects, because if you follow the career of Barry Seal and him flying in and out of New Orleans and into MENA and down to Columbia and all of those, Miami, huge. Fort Lauderdale, huge.
Huge.
As air operations go. And we come across the Civil Air Patrol. So this is a whole nother ball of wax, and we'll save this for next week. But the whole Ukraine, the MH17 flight.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole thing, there are people in the Civil Air Patrol that are involved in on the ground. Air Force, U.S. citizens on the ground during the takedown of that aircraft. And one of them was a commander in the Georgia Civil Air Patrol. And we know that the Civil Air Patrol played a part in dirtying up Oswald as part of JFK.
1,000%.
Yeah. So just the whole air operations thing is just a fascinating, and of course we talked about it as it related to Wexler and the shipping in of weapons and drugs and stuff like that. So, yeah. And all the airlines. I mean, the CIA probably had 10 different front airlines. Oh, and I will leave you with one other thing, because this is going to be a whole show in and of itself. There's a guy by the name, I'm not even going to give you his name. There's a guy, and we're going to talk about him either next week or the week after. I'm working with my daughter on this. He basically, and you won't even know his name, he basically set up an entire Air Force for the CIA to include fighter aircraft. And no one's ever heard of him.
To include fighter aircraft.
To include fighter aircraft. They had their own Air Force.
Now, are they, is this, is it with U.S. markings?
But you're just going to have to wait and see.
Okay.
It'll blow your mind, the entire story, because I came across him in another research project that we were doing that had to do with Colombia and Haiti. So when we were kind of debunking the whole Haiti thing, which Liza and Bridget did, basically, I got off on a tangent of one of the main factors in the history of Haiti. And I went down this rabbit hole, and this man, it takes you all over the world. He was literally involved in so many things, and we've never heard his name.
Hmm.
So we're going to hear his name next week or the week after.
So basically you're saying he's kind of like a something along the lines of like a Paul Helliwell.
I would say he's a Paul Helliwell times about five.
Okay. But I'm talking about
he shows up in everything.
Right.
And we never even knew it.
Right.
But we see Paul Helliwell's name all over. You've never seen this guy's name. And it'll blow your mind.
Okay. Well, now you're like, now I'm like, why? Don't do that to me.
Guaranteed invite back.
Now I'm like super excited for it's the Tribe of Dan Nugent Hand.
Yep.
That's actually very very astute. Nugent Hand is, man, that's some crazy stuff there with Nugent Hand.
Well, and that shows up in so much of the network, and the fact that he had the CIA director's card on his, Nugent did, on his seat, yeah, when they executed him. We were just talking about Hand yesterday, about how he shows up in Idaho. Supposedly, he's like, you know, disappeared, but he actually got traced down to Idaho, and he was using his same social security number, just a different name.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember a lot of this stuff, because it wasn't too long ago. I guess it's been about a month or two ago when I was going through a lot of the George Bush stuff. And you know, looking at Jeb Bush and how, you know, how filthy dirty that Jeb is, you know, and he was down in Venezuela running the bank that was based out of Texas, where there was one branch in Texas and one branch in Caracas. Oh, shocker. Well, what are they using that for? Launder drug money, you know? And that's, of course, that's how he knows Spanish. And then that's why they were. And of course, that traces down to his son, George P. Bush, who was running for Georgia or for Texas attorney general, who he'd reactivated his law license. And that was why they were going after Paxton, because Paxton won. So they had to do everything they could to get rid of Paxton, who I believe is actually a really good guy.
Right.
So I'm just painting with a broad brush. So on just little tidbits of information, because we're kind of we're winding it down here.
And for anybody that doesn't know, the Nugent Hand Bank was a bank that was basically set up and used for money laundering. And it was very similar on a much smaller scale to the BCCI Bank and right. also Castle Bank. And all of the same people tended to have dealings with all of those banks, because early on in Gladio, they were using almost exclusively the Vatican Bank for money laundering. But the drugs got so, once they consolidated and got the Corsican Mafia out of the way, that they were just basically swimming in money. And because a lot of the drug trade is a cash system, they had to figure out ways to money launder that cash. And there was banks popping up everywhere. And Castle Bank in the Bahamas, Nugent Hand Bank in Australia, and the BCCI Bank mysteriously set up in Pakistan, which is basically a CIA failed state, were all used in an intricate money laundering operation. But Nugent Hand was under investigation, and you had Nugent, N-U-G-E-N. He shows up dead in his Mercedes, shot execution style, and Hand, his partner, after he was executed, just mysteriously disappeared.
I remember, and I'm trying to remember if Nugent Hand had didn't they have a bank, or didn't they have an office in like the same, very same building as like the DEA or something?
So most, not,
I was in Thailand or something like that
particular one, but almost every one of these banks, like Castle Bank, their board of directors all intersect with the BCI board of directors, with the Nugent Hand board of directors. They all had satellite offices in all of the same places. There was a couple of them. One was the Republic, National Republic or Republic National, that was in Switzerland, which is the one that was owned by Safra, S-A-F-R-A. He was the guy that financed Hermitage Investments with the Broward guy that was trying to steal Russia financially. And Safra is in on all of this as well. He was a major money launderer. He used his bank to money launder for the drugs and the weapons guys. He was buddies with Robert Maxwell in the Aiden Khashoggi arms trafficking business as well, which most people say that's where he got his billions of money, was in arms trafficking and the drug trafficking and the money laundering aspect of that.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
They were using that money to basically finance Hermitage brokerage that Broward then went into Russia and was buying up as the wall fell, all of these different companies to be able for the West then to own Russia. And when he got kicked out, it was not, again, one of those situations where it would not have been in Russia's best interest to be the one to kill Magnitsky, but he ends up dead because he was the Russian that was helping Broward do it. So it was just as likely that somebody on their way out with Broward shot him, so there's no witness to what they were actually doing. It would make much more sense that that's what happened than for Russia to be the one that killed him, because they would have just as soon had him on trial to rat out the West.
Yeah, that makes, that fits hand in glove.
Yeah, and Safra, who is the money launderer, drug laundering, weapons launderer, is the guy that financially backed Broward. So it ties all of this stuff in with each other. And we know that they want regime change in Russia. We know that they want Russia as part of the pan-Europe seat at the table of the round table. And they want half of Russia given to Asia to be under the Asian control at the round table. And so it just all fits into the whole scheme of Operation Gladio, that that's what they would be doing.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not, you don't have to convince me. I can see, you know, all the stuff that you talk about when you're saying it. I may not have remembered it off the top of my head, but the things that you're telling me, it's like, I remember the vast majority of the things that you're saying.
That's what I'm saying to you. There are so many people that has all of these pieces of information, but until you look at it through your Gladio lenses, and you have to actually recall every piece of it. For me now, having gotten my glasses on and had spent the time to go back over much of what I did know already, but now filtering it. So I've shared with you the analogy of the skeleton. Now I know where to hang it on the skeleton. And I know that this piece goes with this piece. And now I'm connecting this line to that line. And it's so much easier having read all of the historical information, even if I didn't know at the time, to be able to piece all of it together now that I have a framework in which to operate.
You'll appreciate this. Have you ever seen this?
I haven't. Let me blow it up here. Oh, yeah. Yes. So that's what I said. I want somebody to do that with Gladio.
Yeah. This is the scene that I remember you were talking about that one day when we initially talked.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah. Every time you put on the glasses, you see Gladio.
Yep. Exactly. Right.
And somebody, there's been a couple of people I ask on the Alpha show. There's been a couple of people that did memes for me for Gladio. They're awesome. And somebody just sent me, I haven't used it yet, but sent me the Gladio glasses, just with the actual glasses, and it says Gladio on it. So I appreciate everybody doing that, because that's the look right there.
Yeah. It's the truth. It's totally the truth. You know, and I'll tell you that, you know, I'm going to give you credit for this, because it's you were the one that essentially talked about the Gladio glasses and how Gladio was the kind of like the connecting fiber of everything. Because, you know, I look at stuff, and I have very good pattern analysis. A buddy of mine who's a former law enforcement told me, he's like, dude, you are really good at pattern analysis. And as a result of that, I can see all these things and I can see how they are connected, very similar to how you are. But I didn't connect them to Gladio. And now that I've talked to you, and it's like, oh, it's like blowing my world. It's right. It's like a nuclear detonation.
And that's why I want everybody. I just want to share this with everybody, because everybody has different pieces and they will add, and it's just going to exponentially grow. And that's why people have asked, you know, well, why don't you just put all that stuff on your, I don't want to do that. I want to talk to people. I sat, and Liza and Bridget can be my witnesses. We sat with all of this information for so long before Warhamster showed up. And he literally is the one that, and Brian Cates, he did too. Brian Cates got me into some private chats with people that I was able to then talk to about this. And then the sky just opened up. I had a conversation this morning with some people, and I think that there's going to be a few more doors open. And I tell everybody, I don't want anything out of this. I want everyone to know about it. That's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have no idea if you have any interest in doing this or not, but I mean, let's do some roundtables. I mean, you know, you and I think are awesome. We make a good team, but I mean, if there's other people out there who know some of this stuff, let's get all of us together and do something, guys. I mean, it's like you said, you know, it's like I tell two friends and they tell two friends and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So. And, you know,
I think it would be fun to do one with Warhamster too. And I'm sure he has some people, but I want as much attention on Operation Gladio and what the tenets of it are, the pieces, so that people can start forming their own informed opinion, not what we've been brainwashed to believe.
Right. Well, and I'm going to give credit to Warhamster because it was him, his words in one of the videos that you two did when it was like, it was a slap beside the head when he said that the CIA was just it was essentially all the things that the CIA has been doing, they've been doing in the private sector for decades, if not centuries. But doing it under the banner of the CIA is just basically giving a government sanction.
And that's what him and I talked about in our first video. I told him that to me, that's why I came up with the word international syndicate. Cause he laughed when I first told him that we coined that term international syndicate. And it was critical to me to get a neutral word, but a very descriptive word over what the criminal enterprise was. And because all they did in 1947 was flip a switch, they took all of the same lawyers, business owners, bankers, leaders, politicians, whatever, and they just moved them over here, put the CIA label on it, and gave them a rubber stamp that said national security. So all of the people that could have went to prison over here in 1946 now work in 1947 under the banner of CIA with a rubber stamp that says national security. So they will never, ever be held accountable.
Right.
Yeah. That's what my big epiphany was.
And I think was I talking to you about that B-29 that went down and that was where they got the State Secrets Act from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think that's a, I need to dig into that a little bit more because I think there's something to that in terms of that was the mechanism that they used for national security, and it was not that I'm going to give credit to a movie for this, but I don't know if you've ever seen the movie with the Kill the Messenger with the
I'm gonna save you some problem. I've seen Top Gun and that's about it.
Okay. So the movie Kill the Messenger was with Jeremy Renner and it was all about he was portraying the person of Gary Webb, and Gary Webb goes down to Ricky Ross's attorney's office down in Los Angeles and to tell him that Danilo Blandone is going to be the government witness against his client. And he's like, yeah, he's like, every time I ask for their secret weapon or their secret witness or whatever, he says, I can't give it to him. And he says, for national security. And then Renner looks up at him. He says, national security and cocaine in the same sentence. Doesn't that seem odd to you? And it was when, you know, again, I don't want to give credit to a movie, but, you know, that particular scene was like, man, and all that leads back to the to that B-29 that crashed.
Predictive programming.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we're at the 2 hour mark. So let's go ahead and kill it for the day until next week.
Okay.
I just have so much fun with you. So it's so entertaining. So I'm like a kid in a candy store.
Well, so anyway, I enjoy it And I hope everybody else does as well.
Yeah, exactly. I hope everybody gets something out of this as well. So, all right. Well, thank you, Colonel. Appreciate your time. And we will see you and everybody else next week, same time. So
okay.
Have a great day, everybody.
All right.